Welcome to Rock That Relationship, a podcast about all things relationship with Corey and Tracy.
Now let's get real and start creating relationships that rock.
Hello and welcome to Rock That Relationship. We are back with another episode in our season all about self-work, self-growth, all the way to self-love. And today's topic is all about seeking joy, not finding joy, because joy is not hidden somewhere and you have to uncover it like a treasure. Seeking joy is just saying, I'm going to go out and capitalize on all the opportunities there are for a joyful life. And we'll talk all about that today and hear a little bit about our experiences in seeking joy. So,
right. I need to hear that definition again, the difference.
So finding it is like it's somewhere and you have to sort of keep uncovering things until it's like, ooh, there's the gold coin. That's the key to my joy is this great job, or I'll be happy when ... Like you got to find it. But seeking joy is being more open to the idea that there are multiple things that if you look around you, they're probably already there. Right? This idea that joy is there and you can sort of capitalize on it or experience it or leverage it in a way to be happy in all areas, but that you're not necessarily unhappy and looking for the magic bullet.
Interesting. The magic pill, hopefully. Right? If you're looking for happiness, it'd be a pill, not a bullet. Hopefully. That's right?
Well, hopefully.
The bullet. Well, yeah.
Yeah,
exactly. The bullet would have the opposite effect, you'd think.
Well, you'd be dead, so maybe you wouldn't have joy. But
exactly.
But I mean, the whole point is that like a lot of times people will say, I'll be happy when I'm on vacation. I'll be happy when I can get out of this job. I'll be happy when my kids launch and I can have some time to myself. I'll be happy when my kids come home for the holidays, right? There's always like this, I'll be happy when. How about if we could just be happy now?
Okay, but are we like reframing what we're doing and saying I'm enjoying happiness in this moment, no matter what I'm doing, or am I saying, you know, forget it? Who cares if the kid's still here? I'm still going to go on the vacation.
Right. I mean, I think it's a little bit of both. I mean, it's interesting. There was this great study done by tracking happiness, and it's found that 40% of your happiness actually comes from your internal state of mind. And 36% comes from your circumstances. Like sometimes you really are in really bad circumstances and it's hard to be happy when you're, you know, food insecure or housing insecure or have a horrible job. And 24% is actually genetic. So let's talk about all of those because I think that's really interesting because, yeah, happiness comes from a bunch of places and maybe – and there are some things that we can do to kind of increase our happiness in some areas more so maybe than others depending on what's going on. So let's start with the idea of like the internal state of mind. What you're talking about is like being happy in the moment. So like being happy in the moment isn't always these grandiose things that are happening, right? These big, huge, happy news, you know, that comes out of the sky. But it might be like noticing the small things. Like what are like some of the small things in your life that you think bring you joy just kind of on an everyday basis?
Just being alive, seeing this blue sky, it really does make me happy to live in Southern Arizona, even though sometimes I do think I could be somewhere else and be happy. But then when the weather changes, I'm like, oh, so like, I do like seeing a bright blue sky every day or as many days of the year as we have, which is quite a few. And then like the contrast with either the mountains or the trees, that actually really makes me happy.
Yeah. Like the geography, the climate, your space, your environment makes you.
Yeah. And I mean, just daily happiness, being able to connect with, you know, my wife. And then we actually had a great weekend with the kids, like doing stuff and like trying to be more present and happy about that. I'm manifesting that because I've been known in the past to not really appreciate the holiday season. We're coming up on Christmas. And so I manifested a happy Christmas season where I'm like actually enjoying it and engaged because I can tend to like not care.
Well, yeah, you texted me the other day and you're like, we're getting ready for Christmas and we're, you know, I don't know, you were doing all these Christmas festivities and all of this jovial cheer. And I was like, did I get the wrong text here? Like, what is happening here?
No, that's my manifest.
I'm really glad it's your manifest. I mean, if that's going to be one of those things, just a small shift that gives you, you know, better, more joy. Great, right?
Yeah, it will make a big difference.
Yeah.
And even though, so three kids were home yesterday because they were sick, and we still watch dangerous ways to get to school in other areas of the world. So to have an understanding of what everybody has, but then simultaneously to be appreciative, like not like I used to be all poo poo, like forget like our, you know, happiness or our Christmas or whatever. And I don't want to do that this time around in my life. Like I want to actually be enjoying those things that make other people happy, like Christmas songs and Christmas food and Christmas lights, you know?
Yeah. This is exciting. I'm watching this transformation with you into this holiday buff here. This is so cool.
It's funny because I did watch one of those movies with the kids the other day while my wife was doing the decorating stuff mostly, but one of them so was like, is this a Hallmark movie? And I was like, I don't, it was on Netflix, but I'm like, well, it does go along the Hallmark way. And I actually, like, I like those. I've always actually liked those. It's kind of odd because I generally don't care. I don't decorate. I don't care about Christmas, but then I like those movies. That's something fun about those cute mountain towns. And then, you know, like, oh, I didn't know my boss, you know, my boss kind of thing.
I know. Or so, every movie where the overworked executive woman in New York City has to go home for the holidays to save the grandfather's inn from the big developer who's chopping trees down as we speak. And she goes back and realizes that she's still in love with the lumberjack boyfriend from high school who is also single and just lumberjacking in the middle of the street. And then falls in love with him, and the two of them combine forces with grandpa, and they, at the very end they save the inn, and she realizes that she doesn't want to go back to New York City. And guess what? I've seen like 100 of these movies. Bring me joy. It brings me joy every time.
I know.
Every time.
There's so predictable.
They just name them different, like Shake the Snow Globe or, you know, Christmas Flurries, whatever it's called. I will watch it. But
Well, the one I was watching had the woman from Virgin River in it.
I like her. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I know. We're watching this. So we watched the whole thing. And it was actually good because she was poor and she wasn't able to pay her rent on time. And then she ended up falling in love with like the CEO of the ski resort's son. And I forget the name of the movie, but everybody liked it. It was cute. And it actually touched on social justice issues as well. So I thought that was quite interesting. Because she was like, you don't know what it's like, you know? Because I don't want to give away any plot points.
Because I'm going to watch it now. I am going to put it in the show notes too. But I think the key here is that, and this is really what's interesting about this internal state of mind and this idea of joy is, you know, part of it's reframing, but part of it is also being open to new experiences. Part of it is just saying, like, you know, kind of letting go of like these, you know, you're almost like you're shaming of yourself. Like, I shouldn't like these movies because these are cheesy. I love these movies. Let go of that judgment of yourself and just say, like, let the joy pour in. If I have to watch Snow Globe Flurries 40 times, like, to be happy, great. Watch it, right?
You know? Exactly. It's called My Secret Santa on Netflix, by the way.
All right. I will put it in.
It does. And I do think there is something about the simplicity of those movies where, you know, even the villain turns out then to be happy. Like, I mean, why do you want to watch something that's a bummer?
I know.
Well, why wouldn't you want to watch years ago, uplifting?
Yeah, many years ago, I gave up those bummer shows and bummer movies. And you know what? Yeah, we can say, oh, these movies are just, you know, they're fake and they're, you know, they're just unrealistic. And yeah, that's why we're watching them. That's why if they were realistic, we would be just living life, you know, but I think it's some of those kind of small things, right? You find that brings you joy. And I mean, the environment brings you joy. For me, it's at 10 o'clock, around 10 o'clock every morning, I drink a cup of decaf coffee with my French vanilla creamer. And guess what?
And that makes you happy.
Makes me happy. Right. Brings me so much joy every day to do that. It brings me so much joy every day to go on my walk. There's just little things that bring me so much joy. You know what else brings me joy? Crawling into bed at night. I'm very sleepy, but I'm not too sleepy for 10 or 15 minutes of watching some reality dating show and fall asleep watching what's incredibly predictable. But I enjoy it. It's my time, you know?
You know what's fun is watching the other people's video takes. They make videos about those shows. And yeah, there's a new one about Love is Blind, the new season Love is Blind, where people are acting out those people. It's hilarious. So
all right,
I get a lot of joy in watching, you know, like Instagram, TikTok videos, whatever. reels on Facebook that are funny.
Yeah. But I mean, this is what's important about this internal state of mind is finding those little things that bring us joy, leaning into them, not judging ourselves for doing them. And then, you know, letting go of any expectations. I'm not watching a blockbuster, you know, reality show that's going to win all these awards. Maybe it will. I'm just enjoying myself, you know, and I think that's part of it is just having that internal state of mind to shift around and say, I'm going to do more stuff that brings me joy. So,
okay. So I never had a problem. Well, I just didn't do it. I focused more on the, and I want to make this very clear. I still am doing social justice stuff and I'm still focusing on that. I'm still horrified by what's happening in our country, but given that I can't do much to change it, like I don't want to sink into a black hole of depression.
Well, and remember that your attitude gives you fuel for sustaining yourself during the activism and the advocacy that you want
right.
to do. And a lot of times people think that it's the depression and the anger that creates change. And in some cases it does. For me, that doesn't. For me, a sense of hope, a sense of like sometimes when you see a small win, even if it's there's a
right.
big loss right behind it in the social justice world, that gives me joy. And that joy fuels me to keep going and
right.
doing the work. And so, you know, that's part of it is tapping into it. So you don't have to be any less of a social justice advocate to reframe. And you and I have talked about this reframing a lot with social justice stuff. You
right.
know, I can't get tired. I don't, the whole point of it is I don't want to get exhausted and defeated. I want to
right.
feel empowered and hopeful because that's how I'm going to empower other people. And that's, you know, and then we can all move forward together. So let's talk about the second area of the study where they found that 36% of your happiness comes from circumstances. These are things like, again, you're in a job you don't like or your relationship you don't want to be in, or you have to maybe caretake for a family member and you're just, you know, sometimes you can't get out of the situations and sometimes you can. But there's really three ways that people deal with circumstantial unhappiness. And one of them is reframing. Right, which is not changing or leaving, but maybe reframing, like thinking about maybe your job instead of hating your job, reframing it in your mind to think, okay, there are some things that I really like about my job that I get to do, or I'm really thankful I'm learning these new skills. It's reframing.
Right.
Or I'm caring for my mother who's very, very ill, and I'm, you know, really upset about that. But reframing is saying, I get to spend time with my mom before she perhaps transitions, says someone
right.
who lost their mom, right? Like,
right.
can you reframe? And then changing is just changing the circumstances, saying, okay, this job doesn't work for me. I'm going to go find a new job. Or leaving, just saying, I'm done. I'm done.
Right.
I'm out of here, right? Like, and so when you're confronted with circumstances that kind of, you know, put you in a place, again, nobody defines your happiness, but sometimes circumstances can make it really hard to be happy when you're in such bad circumstances. When you found yourself in bad circumstances or negative circumstances, what do you tend to lean on more? Is it reframing, changing, or do you just leave?
I think it depends. I've done all three probably.
Okay.
Like, there, I mean, I have just left jobs or, you know, made it so that I would have to leave relationships also. And then also I've done reframing where it's just not possible at that time to leave, you know? I mean,
right.
sometimes you can't change your circumstances. So you just have to accept it. I think it really depends.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
don't
I think,
you?
Yeah, I think reframing is sometimes the hardest one.
What's the other one? Reframing, leaving, and what?
Changing the circumstances. So maybe let's look at like this idea of a workplace, like reframing might be, you know, I have this job that I'm doing. I don't love it, but I'm going to reframe it so that I think about all the things that I do like about it or how it's really good for me. Changing
right.
might be saying, hey, I'm going to stay here in this job, but maybe I do a different schedule, or maybe I have a few different job duties, but I'm not completely like blowing it up. And leaving is
right.
like, I quit. I'm out of here.
Right.
You know, so they kind of are on a continuum.
I mean, I've literally done all three, and all three have worked in
right.
For that circumstance. But you got to know, right? So you don't. But I do have to say, like, I left the police department at 8 years. I should have left at 10, or just stayed because, you know, everybody I know now just doesn't have to work, and I'm working at this age. But, you know, then I have to reframe and look at that, you know, and as my best friend always pointed out, well, who knows if you stayed, worse could have happened, you know?
Right, exactly. I mean, at the time, leaving made the most sense to bring to move you on to the next step of where you wanted to go for your own.
Yeah. And I was super, super reactionary. So, yeah. But now I look at it, I'm like, okay, well, a little bit more time. But I guess at the time I felt like I couldn't, you know, and right. We only are who we are at that time of our life. Right. Me now, maybe different. Maybe I wouldn't even have lasted as long. I can remember I was going to go back and my sister and other people were like, you're going to hate it. You're going to hate it even more than you did before. And I was like, no, I'm not. Cause all I was fixated on was the retirement.
Right. Right.
You know?
Well, and that's the thing too, is like, you just don't know. Like I've been in situations where I've tried to reframe, you know, or even change a little bit. Like maybe I'm in a relationship with someone or even a friendship with someone and I try to reframe it. I try to change it a little bit. I try to tweak it and it just doesn't bring me joy. So eventually I leave, right? Mm-hmm. I don't usually leave prematurely anything. I usually try to reframe and change things, but sometimes I spend way too much time doing that when I should just be like, I'm done. I'm out of here, you know, with jobs or with projects. Sometimes I just kind of linger too long. And then I sit in a state of, you know, kind of resentment. Like, why am I here? Right. And I'm kind of upset. I'm not happy doing what I'm doing. Sometimes it just, you just need to leave. And then sometimes right. sometimes people leave too early and then they might have regrets and say, if I would have just sort of changed my mindset, maybe I would have, you know, been able to stick around a little bit longer.
But even if you do either one, leave too early or stay too long, you can always just reframe it later. I mean, that's the thing. It's like, we don't know what we don't know. And since we can't predict the future, most of us can't, like, you just have to accept that you're making the best decision for yourself at that time. And then like, trust yourself and listen to yourself, you know?
Exactly. And I think that's the point that is really important to know, is that whatever decision you feel is right at the time, whether that's survival, like bringing in a paycheck, or whether that's happiness, whatever it might be, that's good. But some people know, like they like think, I really need to leave. This is so unhealthy. This is a toxic work environment, but they stay anyways. And that's the part where you say, if you don't reframe this, you are going to suffer a very slow, painful professional death here. So if you're opting to stay somewhere, even though you think deep down you should probably leave, you've got to reframe or change something, or you're going to really suffer.
Right. True.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's look at the other one. I think this one's so interesting. So our ability, you know, to kind of draw from happiness, 24% of it is genetic. I thought this was really interesting. There was there's this researcher, his name is Adam Anderson. He's from Cornell University. He found that there's an actual gene that is associated with a more negative outlook. And this is fascinating because our ancestors actually survived because they were hyper attuned to danger, right? It was you survived because you were planning for the worst, because you were a pessimist. And so they had, you know, had longer lifespans. And so when Adam Anderson looked at this, he actually found study participants with the gene were more likely to point out angry faces in a crowd, identify potential hazards in a situation, and associate negativity with certain words. And so while that served us, and probably still serves us to some extent, we're not living in such a hostile survival situation as we might have been where our pessimism saved our lives. But even though it can to some extent today, it's not nearly as extreme. The idea is, what do we do if we might be one of these people with these pessimist genes, to say, how can I switch it around and try to infuse a little more optimism into my life?
And I have no idea. I mean, what do you think? A blood transfusion wouldn't work to change your genetics.
No, it wouldn't. So, but if you know,
what can you do?
If you have that gene, you might have to focus a little bit more on trying to infuse more optimism. But I don't know where you get this genetic test. I mean, it's one of those things where it's like on some online platform where you prick your finger and send it in. I don't know. But
what could you do? You can't change your genetic makeup.
No, but what you can do, and there's some suggestions, you can look for opportunities in the negative situation. You can remind yourself that a situation is temporary instead of like, you know, most negative situations will pass, or you can focus only on what's in your control, or you can break the cycle by interrupting negative thoughts. Or this one's one of my favorites, is disconnecting yourself from the event, meaning like not a fixed mindset, but a growth mindset. Not like I'm a failure, but I failed at this, right? And if you can start doing that, and that's also reframing, right? That's also part of reframing your mind to sort of challenge your pessimistic thoughts. But some people might have a harder time doing that, right? Because maybe genetically they're more predisposed to pessimism.
Yeah, I think that'd be, yes, I think that'd be very difficult to change your genetic, like, predisposition. I mean, I don't even know how, I mean, really, like, that would take a lot of work.
I mean, it's a lot of intention. I mean, it's not going to come naturally. That's the thing.
Right.
So if you're genetically a pessimist, you're going to see the negative in a situation. And you might, at least if you're aware of it, you might say, okay, stop for a second. I need to interrupt this thought and think about the more positive elements of this situation. So it might take more effort and it might never come naturally.
Yeah, I'd be interested to know if like therapy would help. Because I didn't have genetic pessimism, but I had lived experience pessimism from my childhood, right? So that I had to overcome that. And that was one of my things is like not seeing the joy in the everyday stuff before, you know, after many years of therapy and being a totally different kind of person, I do see that, you know, and I am able to, again, I'm not reactionary like I was. I'm not, you know, I do get cranky and I do act like a baby, but not like I used to, or not as like, and all that, you know, came from the way that I was. And I was hypervigilant for many, many, many years, you know? And so dropping that a bit has helped, I think, but I didn't think that ever came from my genetics, you know? Came from my lived experience.
What did you do though to make that shift?
Therapy. A lot of therapy, which then allowed me to make choices that were like, okay, well, this isn't a good situation to put myself in. But you know, I was way more cranky like the first time I was being a step parent. I'm totally different now. I don't know if it's my age and you know, the fact that I'm already not like I'm not in perimenopause, which can make people totally get so reactive to everything. But like, I have a different mindset. I think the years of therapy really did help.
Yeah.
Which is why I'm always promoting therapy, you know?
Right, right. Well, I mean, I guess your big question is really, how do you know if you do have pessimistic tendencies?
Yeah, how would
you
know
that? Are they
genetic
or are they lived experience? Are they a combination of both? You know, with the greatest therapy ever, would someone who has a genetic predisposition, they just have to work a little bit harder to be able to, you know, tap into.
Yeah, or
if
they have to have an external something, like every time they're doing something, somebody has to like slap them out of it.
I thought you were going to say shock collar, but I thought.
Well, that could be, right? Like in literal,
like a rewiring, yeah.
Yeah, because if it is. If you are predisposed to that, what is going to get you out except like an interrupting event?
Right. Exactly. I mean, it might.
But if it's genetic, it comes from your cells, you know?
Right. Right. It just means that it's, I mean, genetic predisposition, like, you know, a lot of times people will say things like extroversion and introversion are traits, right? That you're born with those. And so as an extrovert, I can engage in introverted behaviors. It just takes a lot more consciousness and a lot more effort on my part, but I can do it. So a pessimist in theory, if that were to hold true, should be able to engage in optimistic behaviors, but they have to put in more effort and conscientiousness to do it. So,
right. And what would be the reason for them to do that? It has to come from their own desire to do that. Now, do they recognize that because people are saying like, my gosh, you're pessimistic a lot, you know, and they're like, oh, I don't want to be that person. Or are they noticing it because it's having like a detrimental effect on their life? You know,
exactly. And who knows, right? It could be either of those. But I do think it's interesting, right? It's like this idea of, you know, for me, I've always been really kind of critical and I called myself a realist, but really I was like, kind of like, not really. I would pick things apart and, you know, kind of had a little chip on my shoulder about just, you know, the unfairness of life. And, you know, I switched that and I did a lot of mindset work to do that. Part of it was therapy. Part of it was law of attraction. But I realized at that point that this probably, without even knowing what I know now, is that probably wasn't like predisposed for me to have a negative attitude. It was just, again, lived experience. And so once I could work on that, it's now much more natural and comfortable for me to have a more optimistic outlook on things. But it took a lot of effort, even if maybe genetically I wasn't predisposed, it still took a lot of effort to kind of shift. And you're working through that now, right? You know, you're working through some of that now too.
I feel like I've worked through a lot of it.
Yeah. I mean, would you say you're an optimistic person or would you say you're more realistic?
I think I'm optimistic. Other people don't, you know, I've said this before, like being vegetarian or vegan since I was, you know, 14 years old. So over 40 years and still believing that it's possible that everybody will become that, you know, like I think that's pretty optimistic. And I think like based on everything I've seen, like, I mean, I was doing obviously divorce law that I still got married. I was a police officer seeing a lot of violence. I didn't shut myself away in a bubble, you know, like, I think that makes me optimistic, even though I can see reality in front of my face. But that's what I'm saying. Like when I've made it, when I've really, I do, and I still do this, I point out the reality of everything around me. You know, and like if people are going to complain about school, then they're going to watch several documentaries on how hard it is for other people in the rest of the world to get to school and why they want to go to school. So it's not like I'm living some Pollyanna thing. You know, I see the reality, but yeah, the optimist, I see myself as an optimist, but I think if people met me, they wouldn't say that. Most people would not describe me as an optimist. I think they would think I'm a pessimist because of the what I talk about and what I, you know, the things that I actually focus on in life.
Well, I think you've, in the last few months though, you've changed your tune a little bit with things, even just the kind of things that you forward me on like Instagram and stuff. And, you know,
well, I'm trying because I don't want to overwhelm you, but believe me, I spend a lot of time looking at the horrors that are happening around us. And, you know, I spend a lot of time with refugees and I know what is, I know that's the thing is that all I can say is I'm grateful for the things that I have. I feel blessed to have even have things in this harsh, harsh world that we live in. So I'm not like not paying attention to the reality of the harshness of the world. I am appreciating. And at the same time, I don't think that I'm special. I just got lucky, you know, I got so lucky to end up with all the things that I have. And it's not like I'm wealthy or anything, but I'm very happy and I have enough to feel comfortable in a way that probably 80 to 90% of the world's population doesn't. And I know that it makes me also like, okay, then I have to, with my disposable income, help others. I have to, with my time, help others, you know?
Yeah.
That's how I look at the world. So to me, that's optimistic, you know, even though I've seen horrible, horrible, horrible things.
Well, that fosters optimism in you. I mean, for me, that would just bring me down. Like, I mean, I read the news and I stay up on things, but I can't go down some of these dark rabbit holes. I just don't have the emotional bandwidth to withstand it. And you could say that's putting my head in the ground or in the sand or whatever. But at the same time, like, I want to be part of the solution, and I can't be part of the solution if I'm going to be, you know,
have to know what works for them. Right.
Like, yeah. Yeah.
So like being okay at the elephant sanctuary, right? Elephant Nature Park. Like, you see elephants who've been abused and lay, you know, they have injuries that have to be treated, and every day, like, even though they've been there for a long time, landmine victims, people, you know, taking their eyes out, horrible things. But then you see the joy, right? That you're part of the joy. Like, you're giving them the bananas and you're cleaning up their area, and you're there to make, to not only, you know, see and witness. I mean, that's something, I don't know if you're familiar with Doctors Without Borders, differing from the Red Cross, is that they bear witness. You know, that's one of their things, is to bear witness to what's happening in the world. And so again, by bearing witness, you can bring joy to others, you know, like, you're helping them by not ignoring their pain. I just watched a documentary where the lady's like, So reality star who's interviewing these people surviving Mormonism. And these two sisters who were abused by the father said, like, no one, we've been looking for years to tell our story and no one wanted to, we couldn't find a venue to do it. And so, you know, this woman who's like a housewife of Salt Lake City was like, why me? Why me? And then she's talked about it later, like, it doesn't matter why her, but by her listening, whatever, it is really like easing the burden on others. So I think in things that people could view as, oh, don't talk about that or don't get in that subject matter, can actually bring more joy in the world, because people who have suffered need an avenue to let that stuff out as well. That's not destructive, you know, but when right. people feel heard about anything, they always feel better.
Well, and if you could be the one to hear them, right, that can mm-hmm. make you feel better too. I mean, I think that what you were saying too, is it really just depends on kind of how you really feel you can be optimistic, right? For you, it's more being in the trenches, kind of being a part of that, you know, seeing the bad things, bearing witness, but being a part of like a solution. Right. Because for me, I'm much more of kind of an intellectual. I don't want to be in the trenches per se, listening to the stories of people individually. I want to be out there making massive macro changes through policies. Right. And that's where I find hope and optimism is through, you know, kind of legislative and, you know, and judicious, you know, kind of right. endeavors. And so, but it's interesting because I think that's really what the key is there's no one right way, right? What you do to find joy and optimism on that larger kind of level, like we're talking about, just depends on what brings you joy. You have to figure it out for right. yourself.
Yeah. And as long as I think that you're trying to find that joy in the everyday life and what you're doing, and that you're actively not harming others, then great. You know, really, yeah. it doesn't matter how you're doing it.
Right.
It matters only to you, you know?
Exactly. Like, it gives me great joy to do this podcast, to know that maybe there's some things we're saying that will help make people's lives better. It gives me great joy to teach, because I know I'm impacting students. It gives me great joy to do, you know, my speaking engagements for the same reason, write books, because I like to be able to, you know, give people hope and inspiration through the words that I share. And that's kind of how I show up in the world. And that's my right. kind of macro effort to do that. And so everybody's going to have their own way of kind of, you know, giving back to get, you know, also where residually you get that optimism.
Right.
But let's talk about like some real tactical things about how to foster joy. I'm just going to, you know, a lot of times when we talk about how do you foster joy, we talk about the same stuff. And these are all really important. We've talked about them on the podcast in many iterations. Things like, you know, watching out for your negative self-talk and find, you know, seek out opportunities that bring you joy. Like if you like to play pickleball, go play more pickleball. Mm-hmm. Eliminating joy sappers, like, you know, people who might, you know, suck your energy or things that you don't enjoy. Find places to go and maybe somewhere where you live that, you know, you enjoy looking at the aesthetics, or having good relationships, having gratitude, being present. All these are really good ideas, right? They're great. And our listeners can take these and run with them. They're all excellent. But there's a few that I think are really key that I want us to like talk more about in terms of things that people might not think about when it comes to, you know, fostering and seeking joy. So let's take a look at a couple of these and see kind of what our thoughts are on them. So, you know, when we talk about the law of attraction is part of an entire list of the universal laws, but we don't talk about a lot of the other universal laws. And one of them is called the law of polarity, which is, you know, having contrast. You don't know that something is hot unless you know that something can be cold. Mm. You don't know that something is dark unless you know something can be light. Like you had to have kind of witnessed the opposite effect in order to have the contrast, right? And so some people say that that this law of polarity applies to happiness, right? This idea is, how do you know what really makes you happy if you don't know what makes you sad? And if you lived in a perpetual state of happiness, it wouldn't really be happy. It would just be neutral. It would just be the way you live your life. So when you think about fostering joy through the polarity is, you know, really kind of thinking about what is a contrasting situation. So, you know, something that may be really unhappy, are there happy elements to it, or are there outcomes that might lead to happiness from that event? So you can have a sense of polarity. So it's, in some ways, from a more simplistic way, it's like looking for the good and bad, right? But The idea is that you kind of, in some ways, I don't want to say people need to have bad things happen, but it's hard to really appreciate the happiness if you haven't had some kind of polar opposite effect.
Well, do we even know that? Because is there anyone on this earth who's not experienced unhappiness? Like, you know, it's that's the whole premise of the Truman Show.
Well, that is true.
Right? But and I have to rewatch that because I don't know why he suddenly started. He started noticing things or something. I have to rewatch it. But is it true? I don't know if that's true. I mean, that's a theory.
Well, here,
I mean, it makes you more grateful, right?
I mean, yes, but think about it. Okay, so I have my cup of coffee every single day, and it makes me really, really happy every day that I have my cup of coffee. There are a couple of days when maybe I'm out doing something and I don't have my coffee and I'm kind of sad. I'm like, oh, I wish I had my coffee. The next day when I have my coffee, I feel more appreciative of it. It tastes better. It feels better. There's something that, makes me happier with that coffee because the day before I didn't have it. Is that a very simplistic way of looking at polarity? Maybe. So,
but let's say you always had it. You just had it from birth and you never knew to not have it. I don't know that that can like make your happiness in it less. You know?
I don't know.
What if a baby elephant is born, it's never tortured, and it just lives in peace and harmony in a sanctuary or in the mountains? Is it going to be less joyful because it didn't get tortured first?
Does it know it's joyful?
Well, right.
Because it just assumes
that
that's the way.
Do we know if we're joyful? Right.
Right, because we're just living, right? Like having my coffee just was neutral, right? It's like brings me joy, but
well,
it became
neutral
because I...
Like when did you start drinking coffee? How old were you?
I'm probably in my early 20s.
Was your life less joyful before that? And was it related to the coffee? You know what I mean?
Well,
like,
I mean, you have to ask yourself.
Let's just say we had an idyllic life. Would we ever really know? I don't buy that. I think people could be idyllic from day one. I don't think anyone escapes this life without sadness. You know, it's just part of the human experience. But let's say a child was young, had loving parents, was so happy, always happy, but they passed away at 7. Now they've passed away. Maybe they didn't know it. Maybe it was quick. So they never knew. What if their entire life was just happiness?
I don't know. And maybe this applies less to the state of happiness and it applies more to like individual experiences. Like my coffee is not a state of happiness. It's a happy event, right? But maybe I don't know. Maybe the idyllic state of happiness, I mean, doesn't exist, right? Because we do have contrast.
Say that again.
So like for someone to be in a perpetual state of happiness about every single thing in their lives is really unrealistic. But it is realistic to think like, you know, you could have a perpetual state of happiness in something that is kind of given to you or you're born into or you have all the time without thinking about it, right? Like, am I happy that I live in my house? I don't really think about that a lot. But if I didn't have a house, I'd be really happy, much happier. I would recognize my happiness if I all of a sudden got a house. But right now, I don't even notice it. It's just like part of my existence. I live in a house.
I don't know. I think that like, I do think there can, happiness can exist without the contrast. I just don't think many people in this lifetime have lived pure happiness without contrast because it's impossible in this world. But I do think I think you could still appreciate it.
Okay. But let's take it from a behavioral perspective. Okay. So you believe that can exist. Certainly could possibly exist. But if you are going through a difficult time, one of the things you can do to foster joy is to think about the contrast of what does happy look like, right?
Right.
I'm going through sadness right now. I don't like my job or something. And you're like, this is really difficult. What does happiness for me looks like? It looks like financial security. It looks like being valued at work. And you can have that. And then you can say, do I have some of those things in this job right now? And then say, yeah, I kind of do. So you can almost find contrast in individual situations so that you can have some level of kind of comfort. Because sometimes, like we talked about, these situations you can't necessarily get out of. So can we find the contrast even in bad situations? Like I've used this example before. My mom died. It was horrible. It was horrible. I was in a perpetual state of sadness, right? But there, not that I wanted to spin it around and say, what good came of my mom dying? But in the end, what I found is that my relationship with my brother got stronger, and I found great happiness in our connection that not that I didn't have before, but it was more so.
And here's the thing. You don't know if your mom hadn't died that you wouldn't have found that anyway.
I don't. But
maybe
but
something else would have happened. Maybe she would have done something to like bring you two closer together, or something would have happened that you guys would have come closer together.
Well, and something like, did happen, and we did come close together.
You're like making lemonade out of lemons.
Exactly. Because part of seeking out joy is taking those situations and leveraging the positive or the contrast from it, right? Like that helped me get through my mom's death. That finding joy or seeking that joy from my relationship with my brother, not only just his support in this whole thing, but that helped me through my mom's death. So when we're talking about fostering joy, it's sometimes taking those bad things and saying, what is the opposite? And can I find that in this situation? And can I lean more on that? And so, yeah, I mean, in the future, there could have been 100 more things that would have brought my brother and I closer together. But that one thing did. And I looked at the contrast of it. I looked at the contrast of my feelings, and I looked at the contrast within my relationship with my brother. You know, we were close, and we have our kids, and we do activities together. And that was sort of a kind of neutral. I was happy, you know, but then once we got closer, I even was able to contrast within that and say, wow, we are far closer. We talk more often. We spend more time together. There's just the contrast, not with just my mom's death and the sadness, but the contrast in my relationship with my brother just was elevated and was more obvious to me. So I just leaned more on that kind of happier, positive side, and that helped me. So maybe it is making lemons out of lemonade. I don't know.
Or
maybe
finding a silver lining.
It could be any of those things, right?
Right. I guess that's really just the key to getting through life, is that horrible things are going to happen, terrible things are going to happen. Yep. And we just have to say in the midst of that, let's look at the sky, let's look at this, or let's, you know, focus on other relationships that we have that can lift us up, you know?
Yeah. I mean, also feeling all the feelings, right? You don't want to like, again, be like Pollyanna-ish and stick your head in the sand and say, oh, I'm just going to not be sad because I don't want to be sad. But looking for the contrast can be really helpful and kind of in the long run as well.
Well, I think that's how it needs to be phrased, is looking for the contrast, you know, can be helpful.
Right, right.
Exactly. Looking for the silver lining, or making a silver lining, making the lemonade.
Right, exactly.
You know, taking that initiative. Because everybody is going to go through stuff.
Right.
You know?
Which again goes back to that, is there really an idyllic state of happiness that you can, you know, live
achieve in on this earth? Probably not.
Probably
right?
not. And sustain, right? I mean.
And the minute that you think you have it, then something will happen that will show you that you don't. I mean, I was watching the Kardashians yesterday, and it was season 6. Which probably is years old, but I happened upon it. And it was Khloe and Lamar hadn't seen each other in 10 years. And I didn't follow any of that story, but apparently he was on drugs and he went into a coma. And anyway, he like thought that they could come back together and basically make out after 10 years. And she's like, oh, the last time I was with you, I was trying to help you like remember how to speak and remember the picture, you know, what your kids look like. And then you went out and did drugs again. And she's like, I don't understand, like, where you think that we could ever, you know, he's like, well, I just, you know, seen my wife again. She's like, your ex-wife. And they were so far apart in their views on you know, what had happened and what they wanted going forward. And I thought it was so interesting because here's, you know, obviously the Kardashians, bajillionaires, get whatever they want, famous, blah, blah, blah. And then even within that, like she had said when they met, it was idyllic and they had 7 great years and she was so happy to marry him. And then it all fell apart, you know, and then she said, like, I'm really proud of myself for being able to be in that room with him and, you know, be somewhat forgiving, but also be like, what are you talking about? There is nothing here. I went through hell. And I'm not ever going back. And why are you talking about making out? Like, ridiculous. So she like stood her ground and she said, you know, having that experience. But you know, would people want to go through that? No, but you don't have a choice sometimes. That's just life. So, you know, on the other end, then she was able to feel good about herself and how she went through it. And I, even these people who have the most privilege of all of us, you know, and want for nothing, life will still get you.
Right.
You know, and one other story from that show is Travis Baker was driving, you know, this really old fashioned car that, you know, whatever her name was, Courtney Bottom. I can't remember who they are, but like they were driving on the freeway. Of course, they had a, you know, an SUV in front of them and back of them, but his 1964 Chevy Malibu blew a tire, you know, right on the freeway. And I'm thinking, here are the Kardashians, you know, stuck on the side of the road. They're literally like 5 feet. And then there's four lanes of really fast traffic. And I'm like, anything can happen to anybody at any time. Right. And, you know, he was in that terrible plane accident. And so you have to think, how can I go through? How am I going to choose? It is a choice at some point, you know?
Right. Because things are going to happen to you. Things are going to happen no matter what kind of privilege, what kind of money, what you have, what your life circumstances are.
Yeah.
And you have to figure out how to identify what can you do to move forward, right? And that's like, that's this whole idea of contrast. This was a really interesting conversation about contrast because it gets you really thinking about going back to that idea of mindset, right?
Right.
And the power of the mind and getting you through difficult circumstances and situations. There's actually kind of in relation to this, there's a person named Tally Shart who wrote in Wired magazine something about similar to this, like what we're talking about with contrast, is that there's something that's called interrupted consumption. So she suggests that if you basically your body tends to respond less and less to things that are constant and frequent. So again, like if I have my cup of coffee every single day, I get used to it. But if I interrupt it and I only have it once a week, I find more joy actually in it. Mm-hmm. Like every Tuesday's coffee day. Right. She suggests doing that. Like if you're used to eating a piece of chocolate before you go to bed, do it like every 3 days and then you look forward to it more. And so, because we become a little bit duller to our happy experiences if we inundate ourselves with them. So the idea is to spread them out. I think that's fascinating. I'm still going to drink coffee every day, but I think it's really interesting. Right. Is like what we're talking about is almost creating contrast, right? Like, you know, so that you can feel happier when
so you can, right, have more joy.
Exactly. That's a fascinating thought.
I need to think about that because like, what would I choose? You know, like, I mean, I think, yeah, because you could get used to anything, but isn't that then like you're taking it for granted? And when you take something for granted or you know that you're going to have it, there just isn't as much pleasure in it.
Right. Well, do you remember when we were younger before we had streaming services and like every Thursday night you'd watch your favorite TV show, but you had to wait until Thursday and it was like you were so excited and so much joy in watching it and, you know? Now you can just binge them all and it's like, oh, I'll just do it while I'm, you know, washing the dishes. And it
I still have the same amount of joy.
Do you?
I do. And I love it. I'm like, oh, thank God I don't have to. I mean, especially for someone, you know, who doesn't like to wait. Like, I love it. I don't think that because you could space it out yourself.
You could. You could. But I think that forced space was like gave me like anticipation, like. I remember my favorite shows on like Sunday night and I would wait all week and I would count down the days until my show. I mean, yeah, I could do that now and it's called interrupted consumption. You can do that yourself. Right. But I really liked the idea that I couldn't access it, right? Like I was like, oh, I'm so excited. And then when
do you know
was
that
over,
wasn't even just when we were kids, you know, that happened when I was in law school at 35, 36 years old, because the L word was on and I used to wait every week. They wouldn't release it. That was when they still released it 1 week at a time, you know, which they did with The Handmaid's Tale also. So like now I sometimes will just wait to watch the series until they're all released because I don't want to like, I can't stand it. But that was the thing, the L word. And then there was a woman who wrote like a review of it that was 11 pages long that I would read during class. Like, I couldn't wait. Like, the second it came out, her review, I had seen the show, but I wanted to see her pick apart every single thing in that show. And that was like just as much pleasure for me was to read her review after the show.
That's so interesting. Well, that's like when you watch you watch some reality dating shows much faster than I do. And then you want to talk about it. And I'm like, I can't, literally, if I'm like scrolling through the news and I see something about a show I'm not done with yet, I'm like, scroll past it. I don't want any spoilers. Yeah. Spoiler alert is something that is new. It's like a new phenomenon. When things came out regularly, you know what I mean? Like you couldn't go back and watch them, you know, you didn't have spoilers. And so you could, every week you could hear somebody debrief like what happened that week. And now it's just like, oh gosh, don't tell me la, 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 la. I don't want to know who they pick.
But look at this, how we've progressed as a society, right? Like, oh no, you could binge it or whatever. So some people could think that's bad, some people not. But back in the day, you had to wait. Everyone kind of watched the same thing because you only had four channels. So it's like, oh, everybody watched the show and talked about it in the neighborhood or school. But now you can go online and see 1,000 different takes of what happened in that episode.
Right.
And like, I like that because I will do that. Like, you know, there's that funny SNL video about murder shows. What you got? I think I've shown it to you, but it's like, what do women like to do? You know, they watch murder shows. So it's like, I'll send it to you. It's hilarious. But the women are watching the murder show. They're like, oh God, you know, the boyfriend's leaving for the night and they turn on their murder shows. And it's like, after they're done watching that murder show, then they go down the rabbit hole of every podcast, everything that's been written about it, you know, and you have all those people online who are doing that and actually solving crimes.
Yeah.
Well, you know,
and it brings you great joy to watch those and hear those and all that. And, you know,
And it's very interesting. I think that's, here's the contrast or the finding the silver lining is when people complain about tech, they complain about, oh, the world's becoming too tech, whatever, AI, blah, blah, blah. Like, okay, well, with each of those things, life changes, right? So the Buddhist precept is like the attachment to anything is what causes your suffering. So if I'm attached to a 1970s lifestyle or a 1980s lifestyle and I can't adapt, right? That's what's going to cause me the suffering. So if I can say instead, hey, yeah, the show's on streaming, but look, it then propagated all these podcasts, all these things that I can really get a deep dive into where you weren't able to do that 30 years ago. So whatever you're doing in life, even if you're like doing something old fashionedy, you can probably find an online group talking about that, right? So it's like everything absent horrendous human rights abuses and all that, like could have a different, a silver lining, you know?
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Because of all the outlets and portals for people to engage more with it. It makes a lot of sense. All right. We have one kind of last one that I wanted to talk about that I thought was interesting about seeking joy was this idea of it's kind of like the helper's high, they call it, or bringing joy to others or finding joy in others' joy, something that has to do with other people. Like you're either helping them, you're impacting them, or what they're doing is just joyful and you're finding joy in it. How much joy do you find, not just in your own behaviors, but in, you know, kind of interacting with other people who are joyful or just bringing joy to them? I mean, is that a joyful experience for you?
I don't know if I'd call it joyful. Satisfying, maybe. Is that joy?
I don't know. Is it?
Is satisfying joy? I mean, I don't know. That's interesting.
I mean, like, I love giving gifts to people that are really like sentimental or really thoughtful gifts. I'm not a big gift giver or gift receiver in general. Like, don't, you know, you don't have to buy me something off of Amazon, you know, like some random thing. But if it's like a really nice card, I like to give it to someone. I like to write in it. I like to give very thoughtful things. So doing that and then seeing them smile or I made their day with that, that brings me a lot of joy.
Yes. I think seeing other people's joy, that's what you're seeing, right? Is other people's joy.
Right. Whether you helped instigate that, right, by doing something for them or giving them something, or whether you're just witnessing them have joy, you know, like when there's some people who will go to a wedding and be like overwhelmed with joy for the couple that's getting married.
And some people are annoyed.
And some people are annoyed or they don't want to go because they don't have that joy in their marriage or they haven't found anyone or they're not in a relationship, whatever the case may be. But the idea of joy is being able to see other people's joy and let that make you joyful.
Yeah. I mean, we talked about that in our early podcasts about like how when you're not in a great state of mind or you've had a breakup or whatever, can you be happy for other people and not getting online and being like, oh, they're in a relationship, gross, or I don't want to see their happy pictures or, you know, mocking them or whatever. So I do think that that's like we should have an attitude that even if we're not personally having it, right, we should appreciate or be happy for other people. And yeah, why we should go around making other people happy if we can. I mean, not like you have to, you know, like harm yourself and like disadvantage yourself to do that, you know?
Mm-hmm. But influence or help other people be happy or help just in general. I mean,
I don't like that term helpers high though. That sounds pathological. Like that you're doing it to like get off your own, like get your own self. Like,
right.
I don't like that. Like, yeah, my life is about service. That's just the way I am. I mm-hmm. read about it in my horoscope or my whatever. That's the way I've been since I was a kid, you know? Mm-hmm. It's not like, oh, I need to be needed. What show was I watching? Oh, wait a minute. There was a show. It was a drama, but it was a murder thing. Anyway, basically, the husband / brother / whatever, super manipulative. He wanted people to need his help. So he basically right. changed situations. So therefore, he looked like he was helping them. And I feel like that terminology, helpers high, is like that. Like, no, can't you just say, I find joy in the joy of others, or I find joy in helping others, or I find joy in creating joy for others, without it being like, I don't know, that just sounds bad to me. I don't like that term.
I mean, it gets to the point of intention.
Sounds right? exploitative.
Like intention, if you're helping or doing something so that you can be seen in a good light, that's different. But I think the point of the helper's high, it had something to do with kind of some scientific release of endorphins, this idea that when you contribute or you serve someone or you do something nice for someone, your brain literally releases endorphins that feel almost like a high. Now, whether you do that to get high or whether you do that because it just occurs, that's probably the intention and the manipulation piece behind it. But
right. See, my mind immediately goes to someone starting a fire so they can save the people from the right. fire and look like the hero. With right. like helpers high. Yeah. People are doing bad things so that they can then look good.
Right, right.
That's where I initially go.
Isn't that interesting? Because, yeah, the reality of it is that just sometimes when we do nice things for people, we feel good. And that's right. why there's been this long time debate over whether altruism really exists, right? Because altruism assumes you're doing something without anything in return. But is that even possible to be that neutral where you do something nice and you don't feel good about it or feel proud about it or feel satisfied? So is that, if that's the case, is that really altruism? If you're still getting something out of it,
right.
not intentional, but you are still getting something, is altruism real then?
Well, I've had that argument before with people who don't believe that altruism exists. And I'm like, just because a person gets a side benefit, right? So I'm an animal rights activist and vegan, but my side benefit is that I'm healthy because of it. But does that take away my initial, you know, reason for doing it? Because I'm getting a side benefit. So I'm doing something to help somebody and then, okay, wow, that made me happy to see how their life changed or progressed. And, oh, I was part of that. I don't know, the way that helper's high just sounds so pathological.
Yes. Well, and the same thing with altruism. It's like this idea of, you know, is it altruistic if your main priority or your main purpose in doing something is not to get something out of it, but you happen to get something out of it? Or can you be altruistic and have a side benefit? Some people say, no, you shouldn't have any benefits, even if it's on the side. So,
yeah, you know, I don't believe in that. That to me seems like a stingy view of life, because we're all going to get some kind of benefits. But yes, if your main purpose for doing something is to like get your own benefit, then no.
Right.
No, then you're that's not altruistic. Okay. But like, if we're talking about seeking joy and you're feeling down or you're feeling in a lower place or whatever, then if you going out and helping someone else or volunteering at a shelter or doing whatever then brings you joy, like that's great. Like mm-hmm. it can be used as an impetus to help yourself, right? Is that bad? No, in my opinion.
Not necessarily. I mean, as long as you're not using it for malintent, but
right.
Yeah. Like, you know, when
is it malintent to just make yourself happy?
No.
It's maybe not altruistic, but it's also not malintent, right?
Right. I mean, when I'm feeling like, not even when I'm feeling down, but like sometimes I'll go over to the cat shelter and I'll play
Right.
with the kitties. And that's giving to the kitties. The kitties love human
Right.
interaction. That's why they invite people to come over and I'll sit
Do
with them
the
on the
cats
lap.
care while you're there?
I mean, the cats enjoy it. That's why they invite
Right.
people to come. So it is good for the cats, but it's also good for me. So we're getting a
Right.
symbiotic kind of benefit from it.
Right.
But it brings me joy to do that. And I think it brings him
Right.
joy too. And so that, I guess the point in seeking happiness or seeking joy, like we're talking about, is finding those things where you can give back or you can show up for others. And if, not in a, not in a kind of mainline way of saying,
Right.
I'm going to get joy from this and that's the only reason I'm
Right.
doing it. But can you get joy from those things? Yeah. Find a way to give back. Go out and volunteer on a weekend. Go
Right.
help a friend who's moving. Do something, right? Like that
Right.
will probably bring you some joy in addition to helping other people.
Exactly.
Yes.
Perfect.
Oh my goodness. We've covered so much ground today. And I feel like today's episode was really like philosophical. It was kind of cool. We got to talk about just bigger concepts, right? Like sometimes we're, we talk about a lot of tactical things, but I think some of these really are good for our listeners to really grapple with. Like, what is
Yeah.
altruism? What is interrupted consumption? Do you believe in the law of polarity and the idea of contrast? Like, do you believe in the genetic factors related to happiness? Is that possible? Are you genetically predisposed to pessimism? Like, these are bigger questions. And like I said before, we can get on this podcast and we've done it before and we've said things like have gratitude and we'll talk more about gratitude. We'll talk about
Right.
being present. We'll talk about all those like low-hanging fruit. But I think sort of these philosophical questions to grapple with also help people better understand what is at the root of that can give them joy, right? Like you have to know how you even define joy before you can go and seek it.
Right. Agree.
All right. Any
And it
closing
really doesn't
thoughts?
matter as long as you're not being a bad person.
Okay, so don't be a bad person. That's a very good takeaway.
If you get some side benefit for yourself, as long as you're not being a jerk and causing suffering, right?
Yeah.
Like, who cares? But I do find the whole altruism question interesting. And I have actually had several arguments about that in my life.
Okay. But I mean that's good for critical thinking, right? Like
Right.
you don't have to have an answer to it to have the conversation. I think that's what's really neat. So hopefully
Right.
our listeners will kind of reflect back on some of these things and think about them for themselves, but also like talk about it with other people. You and I have never had some of these conversations. It was really cool to see where our differences lie and our interpretations lie and how that might impact our ability to seek out the joy that we want by virtue of
Right.
how we define it, right? All
None of
right.
us have more philosophical conversations. It's always good for us.
It is. It keeps your brain kind of wired in a way that keeps it fresh and on point. So, all right. Well, this has been a really fascinating conversation. And for all of our listeners out there, until our next episode, go out there and rock those relationships. If you liked what you heard, check out our show notes for resources from today's episode. Make sure to follow us on Facebook and Instagram under Rock That Relationship and go to our website at rockthatrelationship.com for updated episodes and more great information.
Thanks for listening. Now go rock those relationships.